Welcome to Always and Forever, a spoiler-free One Tree Hill podcast where we analyze and dissect the greatest teen show from the early 2000s.
This week we are discussing Some You Give Away, aka the state championship episode.
Woo!
Which is the 9th episode of season 4, which was written by the creator and showrunner, probably the one low point about this, directed by Greg Page, and originally aired on the CW on November 29th, 2006.
The description for this episode in our OTH DVD box sets reads, Q, how can you save your family and your career? A, throw the state championship. Dante leans on Nathan to lose the big game, but Lucas and Skills hatch a plan to win.
Somebody told me that this is the place where everything's better and everything's safe, unless you're the Ravens.
All my dreams just came true. I'm Caitlin Elenich.
Oh.
Jeremy? Dead silence.
So this song is titled After... This episode is titled After the Song by La Rocca. What did you think of this song?
So, based on the title and then the lyrics that repeat, some you lose and some you give away, makes me think that it could be connected to Nathan throwing the state championship, or at least attempting to throw the state championship. And there's some lyrics later on in the song that say, I lost some friends out on that empty road. And when I read that, I was thinking, like, if Nathan was successful in throwing the state championship, like, he could have lost a lot, including friends. Like, that would have been a big deal. So that was really what I was thinking about when I was listening and looking at the lyrics. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, similar thoughts. And I really feel like this entire song was mostly connected to the coda, because it all had to do with, like, maybe not necessarily losing friends, but losing lives, because look what happened to Haley, look what happened to Lucas. There were a lot of, like, unintended consequences for what happens at the state championship. Even though it was, like, you know, it was supposed to be, like, this really joyous moment, and it was in many ways, but there was still a lot that these characters had to sacrifice.
Yeah, that's a really good point. This is an intense episode, Jeremy. Arguably one of the biggest episodes of the entire series.
It is, yeah. It's very, very action-packed. I know you did the same thing, actually. I got really busy this last week, and I just had no time to watch it. So literally, like, and normally I like to watch the episode, like, a few days before we record, and then again the day of. But I just did not have time, so I ended up watching the episode 3 times today, twice for my regular viewing, and the 3rd time for the audio commentary. But, like, for this episode, I'm like, I don't mind.
Yeah.
It's like, this episode is, like, not the worst in the world, but yeah, I watched this episode 3 times over the course of, like, the last 5 hours, and here we are recording.
So you've memorized it, basically.
Pretty much. And you did the same thing, too. Yeah. You didn't have any time, and you just watched it.
Including the commentary. Yep.
Oh, my God. So, yeah.
I mean, honestly, when I was watching it, I was so absorbed. I mean, you know, like, the rest of the season has been a struggle to kind of get through. And I know we haven't really liked most of the episodes of the season so far, and we promised that, like, there was better things to come, and this is the episode.
This is one of the better
times. This is it, folks. So, you know, I was watching it, I'm like, I was just completely absorbed in it. It's action-packed. There's something is happening in every scene. I mean, there's no, like, you can't take a breath, I feel like, when you watch this episode, because it's just, like, one thing after the next, especially the ending.
And I feel like And I feel like a lot of the characters moved in, like, more positive directions, because we criticize, like, a lot of the, like, a lot of the characterization of, like, Brooke Payton, for example. And that kind of, like, comes to a close here. Like, you know, Brooke is a little bit toxic, but then eventually, like, she comes through and just says, like, okay, maybe I can be better to Payton, even though she doesn't say those words out loud. She is a better person. There are a few issues I have with Zeb in this episode, but we'll get to that when we talk about it. But yeah, you're absolutely correct. This episode is just very, very action-packed.
It's a really well-done episode, I have to say. Like, despite all around.
Despite it being written by a complete trash person. You know, and we can acknowledge that. Which, by the way, I gotta say, I did watch the audio commentary. It was with That Monster and with Rick Fox, who plays Dante, as we know. And one of the funniest things I listened to was that, like, apparently he was trying to explain the whole calculus con with, like, you know, with Rachel trying to, like, get the keys. And I thought it was so funny that apparently, like, Sophia and Zaneel and Joy, like, did not understand it at all. And we were just talking about that in our spoiler segment. You can listen to that on patreon.com/alwaysothpod, by the way. We chatted about how, like, it doesn't really add up. Like, why did Rachel try to steal the calculus test? Like, and fake failing calculus when she could, like, be like, hey, like, how about we help Brooke instead?
It was just, like, another example of a misdirect in this season, which you might have said that before in a previous episode.
Yeah.
With the whole pregnancy thing was the first one, and then, like, this now. So it seems like they like that storytelling technique, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, which, speaking of misdirects, yeah, let's talk about, like, you know, what happens in the very, like, open, in the opening moments of this episode. Where, like, we hear this sports announcer be like, oh, the Ravens have lost their state championship. And that Scott, boy, he is going to be a failure, blah, blah, blah. And it turns out, like, we learn later on, that was from the state championship from many years ago.
18 years ago.
How many?
18 years ago.
18 years. That makes sense, yeah. The one that Dan lost.
Yes. That was so, quite clever.
It was clever. I did like that, actually. This is probably the best example of a misdirect.
And I don't know if I have, like, super vivid memories of watching this live. I mean, I know I must have. But, like, when it's the whole episode starts and then you hear that voiceover and you see Whitey standing there in the street and there's just, like, all this, like, stuff everywhere. And you don't even really know what happened.
Yep. We see Nathan crying in the hospital.
Yes, like, you see Nathan crying. So it's like, as a viewer, you're thinking, they must have lost. And wow, they're going to reveal that right off the bat. I really wonder what my thoughts were. Like, was my jaw dropped, like, as the show started? Or I wonder if I was thinking, like, was there more to the story?
I feel like I remember thinking there was more to the story. Yeah. Because I was like, there's got to be something here. They're not going to spoil this right in the beginning.
I know.
You know?
I know.
Because that's a popular storytelling technique, I feel like, where you're led to believe one thing is happening, and then you learn later on. So, I want to say I had the intelligence, but who knows? How old was I? I was 16.
Yeah, I don't know. But you're right, it is like a common technique where it, like, kind of rewinds and you get to see what happened before that.
Mm-hmm.
But it is super misleading, though, because, like, was it the radio, like, taken out of context? You don't really know what it is and what could have possibly happened. So.
But it really does work, and then I like when you finally, like, you get to that point in the episode when it's like, oh, that's a different radio announcement. We're like, oh, we still don't know what's going to happen at this game. You know, so it kind of, like, keeps you on the edge of your seat again for a little bit. You know, while you still care about, like, you know, what led up to this, what led up to them losing. When you find out, like, oh, wait, we don't know if they actually lost. It's pretty exciting, I will say.
It is. It, like, drives the episode, too.
But yeah, other things that happened in the intro, we learn about what happened between Lucas and Peyton after the cliffhanger from the last episode when Peyton confessed her love. And they added extra lines to this scene, and I don't like it.
Did they?
Yeah. So if you remember from the previous episode, Peyton says, "I love you, Lucas." "Oh, no, you don't understand. I've been holding this in for a really long time. I love you. I'm in love with you." There's an extra line that Lucas delivers where he says, "I love you too, Peyton. I mean, we've been through so much together." That extra sentence, "I mean, we've been through so much together," was not in the previous episode.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
You did not catch that? I'm so surprised you didn't catch that.
I guess maybe because I didn't I didn't watch them back to back, maybe? Wonder why did they add that?
I don't know.
Weird. You think they would have filmed the whole scene and then cut it for, like, episode 408 and episode 409.
Yeah, I don't know if they just used, like, a different take or something like that.
Huh.
Or maybe, like, when Chad delivered that line, like, they needed to, like, cut just a few seconds of the scene just to, like, fit the episode or something like that. That's a possibility. But at that point, I'd just be like, just keep it consistent. Just, like, make sure you use the same thing, like, between episodes, I think. Use the same footage.
Yeah, that wouldn't be the first time they've done that. Like, I'm thinking end of season 2, beginning of season 3. There were inconsistencies.
Oh, what was that?
With Haley and Nathan. Haley at the doorstep.
Oh, what was that again? Remind me.
Well, first off, I think she looks different. Like, her hair's totally different. And then the way you can tell that she's saying the line differently.
Oh, like, yes, you are. Yes, just, I called that out, too.
It's slightly off. How she says, "I think hi."
Yeah.
I think it's just hi, but it was like, it's different.
Yes, I do remember that. I mean, they gotta do what they gotta do. But I mean, at least it was like, if you watch that in real time, at least it was a few months between episodes. And this one, it's like a week after week. Like, what the hell? What are you doing?
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Huh. Yeah, I didn't catch that.
Yeah. But anyway, Lucas just says, "Oh." And then it cuts away right there.
And then,
so,
yeah, and then
we're kind of like in limbo right there.
What a response, first off. Like, when someone said, like, I do kind of understand it. When someone says something like that to you and you really aren't prepared, he wasn't coming in prepared for that. When you don't really know what to say, you're just going to say, like, "Oh, we're okay." I get it. Like, in the moment, you kind of freeze. But with all the history that they have, that's a heck of a response. And I love that Skills calls Lucas out. Like, once again, we get to see Skills be the voice of reason.
Yes, it's so great to say.
And he makes some really good points. Because I think Skills is giving Lucas a hard time. And then Lucas kind of brushes it off and says, like, "Oh, I just quickly talked about, like, we're friends," and then left. like, he didn't, we
I
never
still
really
see
got
the rest of that scene. Does he literally just turn around and be like, "Oh, okay, we're really great friends. Okay, bye-bye."
I know, because, like, we don't actually get to see the scene, and then he just kind of mumbles, like, what he said, and you don't really know his exact words.
Yeah.
So, and then Skills goes on and, like, makes all of these points, like, because Lucas seems to be, like, dumb, like, just not aware of his feelings or something. I don't know what's going on, but Skills makes the point. He says, "You chose to be there," meaning for Peyton, and he lists all of the different times, like the school shooting and, like, with Derek and, like, all of these things that he was there for Peyton. And I think that at least makes Lucas think a little bit.
I don't know about that, though. Like, just because you're there for somebody when they're, like, when they're about to die, does that mean you're in love with them?
I know.
You know?
Yeah, those are all extreme circumstances, too.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, I'm pretty sure Lucas would have done the same thing if it was, like, mouth in that situation.
Yeah.
You know? He would have stayed with it. Maybe they wouldn't have kissed and, like, you know, and mouth wouldn't have said, "I love you." But
Yeah.
You know, there are layers to that, I think. I have a little bit of space for Lucas, though, just not knowing what to say, because in addition to him maybe not knowing what his feelings are in that moment, I feel like the whole situation with Peyton is really what caused, like, a lot of drama. Like, that's what caused a lot of drama between him and Brooke so many years ago. So I feel like he might be a little bit hesitant at first, because he's like, oh, God, like, what do I do about this now?
Yeah, I think his impulse is to, like, push his feelings down for Peyton, because it's what caused all the drama with Brooke since the beginning of the series. So, yeah, you make a good point. I was kind of thinking the same thing, like...
And I feel like that adds up, too, because we won't talk about this now, because we'll get to that later. But when he gets that okay from Brooke later on, I feel like that just gives him, like, okay, like, this... It's all right to have these feelings, and there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
Anyway, in addition to, like, this intro, we also see Nathan and Lucas talk to each other on the River Court. And Lucas is like, oh, we're going to be state champs tomorrow. And then Nathan's like, I don't know about that. And then he tells Lucas, like, I really needed the money. And then Lucas is, like, really, really pissed off. The thing that I am really frustrated with Nathan about here, though, is why isn't Nathan telling him, like, listen, like, my family, your family, lives are in danger.
I know, yeah.
Instead, he just makes it seem like, oh, it's just about the money here.
Like, yeah, true.
I'm pretty sure Lucas would have been a little bit more understanding if Nathan shared that. Because I understand Lucas being, like, upset in this situation, but I don't think he has any idea that, like, lives are literally in danger here.
Yeah, you're right. Like, I don't think he doesn't know the extent of it. And, like, the threats that Rick has...
Dante, you mean?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Dante.
All good.
Yes. So, he doesn't really know about the threats. So, I feel like that's important information. But at the same time, it's like, this is devastating. So, I understand the anger that Lucas is feeling. Yeah. Because Nathan said he was done, and then now he's not done. And this is the most important game. It's riding on, like, this game is so important for the team, but also for Whitey. And that is just gut-wrenching to think, like, you could throw the game and then Whitey's last game is a loss.
It is really, really sad.
You know, it really is a great choice that they made to create this conflict about the state championship, because we could have just went into the episode and there's no conflict. Like, the team wants to win and they're going to do everything they can to win. And there's all this excitement. But, like, this puts pressure on the team and, like, between players, and you really don't know what's going to happen at all. It's like, are they going to throw the game? Are they not going to throw the game? Can they even win the game?
It's very good soap opera conflict.
Yes, it's sure. Like, there's so many different variables here of what could happen.
It's so funny. I was recently in a Discord thread where we were all chatting about One Tree Hill, and for us who love soap operas and whatnot, like, I feel like this conflict is interesting to us, but there was somebody who joined in on the Discord thread and said, you know, honestly, I started watching One Tree Hill because I was hoping to get a show about basketball, and I got that. And I, like, there's one other friend, too. I said, like he started watching One Tree Hill because he wanted a show about basketball. And I just feel so bad for, like, the people who were, like, really expecting a sports show, and it turned out not to be that whatsoever.
Yeah. It's...
One Tree Hill ended up going on for 9 seasons with storylines like this, so it's... They did something right here, but it's just so funny to think about.
It's a common thread throughout the show, but there really isn't a huge emphasis on, like, the sports aspect of it. Like, this episode with the state championship and really focusing on a game and, like, all of the like, just going up and down the court, like, all of the action of the game, it's pretty rare. Like, you usually only get maybe a few minutes at most of that in an episode where, like, a game is involved. But, like, this was a good chunk of the episode. It was fun to watch. I think the directing was good, too.
Mm-hmm. Which, one of the things I found very interesting about the commentary, too, is that they were very intentional about the jerseys that the opposing team, the Pontiacs, wore. They were wearing red and white, because if they had red and white, they are actually able to use stock footage of previous games that were shot in that stadium. So, apparently there's some of... I tried to look, and I couldn't find any. But apparently there are shots, like, if you pause at just the right moment, you'll see that the red and white jerseys aren't the Pontiacs, but they're another team. But they're so far away, you can barely see it. So I just found that very interesting. They were like, oh, they were just able to, like, so they didn't have to shoot so many basketball shots or anything like that. Plus, in addition to that, they didn't have that many extras. It looked like they had a lot of extras in the audience, but... They were actually using a lot of stock footage to make it look like the audience was bigger.
Yeah, I noticed, I could tell even before listening to the commentary that it was stock footage, because I was watching it like on a big TV, and like it went from clearly what was filmed for the show and like the really wide shots, it was really kind of grainy and blurry, and I was like, that's totally a stock image. Yeah. I caught it a few times, but I would not have paid attention to like the jerseys. You wouldn't have been able to see it. You could just see colors, but
yeah. I just thought that was cool that they were able to do that.
That is really cool.
But yeah, we'll be talking about the game a little bit later, but let's talk about some of like the other miscellaneous storylines that happened in this episode. So we learned that Rachel's not actually failing calculus. It's Brooke.
Oh my god.
As I said, Joy, Tennille, and Sophia were all wondering, like, I don't understand. And the creator was like, it's okay. Like, he was talking to Joy and Sophia and says, the two of you don't have to understand. You're not in on it. But I'll get Tennille on board. And Tennille eventually came on board, I'm guessing. But I still just find it such a ridiculous storyline.
Yeah, I wish there wasn't the storyline at all. Like, why does anyone have to be failing, first off? And, like, if someone's going to be failing, just reveal that they're failing.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it would have been much more interesting if, like, Rachel was failing and Haley had to tutor her, though.
Yeah.
I still think that would be a much, much more interesting storyline to see, like, you know, these two are always at odds and then they end up having to come together. Like, that's an intriguing storyline, but then we end up finding out, like, oh, this is just Rachel's con to steal the key so they can steal the calculus exam.
Yeah, so, like, why did they just continue the storyline with Rachel failing and she's getting tutored by Haley? I don't understand why they had to switch it to Brooke.
And it almost feels like
we're supposed to care more about Brooke.
Yeah, I was just about to say that, because like, and I almost feel like that's kind of like shitting on the idea of like Rachel too, because I don't know. I feel like with Rachel failing, that was like to try to get us to care about Rachel, to be like, oh, like let's, you know, she's not going to be able to graduate with her friends. Like, that's a little bit upsetting. Like, I feel like we could have like went on like a really interesting character arc with her, and then you know, it's like, oh, like, but. It's almost like the writers are saying, like, oh, but you actually need to care about Brooke. Brooke is the one you should care about. So, fuck Rachel.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
That's the vibe that I'm getting of why they would switch it like that. Like, it's a bigger deal that Brooke would be failing because she's the core, you know, the core five, part of the core five characters.
Yeah. Which, like, yeah, she is, but I don't know. I feel like there's just more interesting storylines to have for Brooke, like, than this.
Agreed. Same with the next storyline that we're going to discuss.
Yeah, Zeb. So Karen is, like, very, like, confrontational with Zeb. She just says, like, hey, your son was named MVP. And then she's like, take a shower, get dressed, and see what's left of your dignity.
And you see them driving in a car.
Mm-hmm. And, like, Deb's about to take a pill, and Karen's like, it's one game. Like, it's just one night. Like, you have to do this tonight, and then she ends up taking it anyway. And then Deb goes to rehab, and she misses out on everything.
Do you think Karen made the split decision to take her to rehab because she took that pill? Or was she always taking her to rehab? Because I think the way I had always viewed it was that she was always taking her to rehab.
Oh, really? I always viewed it as a split-second decision.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
because I feel like she wanted to give Deb the benefit of the doubt and said, like, okay, like, let's make sure you're a good person. But The thing I really don't like about this whole storyline, though, is that it lacks so much nuance. And I feel like, you know, the way, like, addiction is being portrayed in the land of television is like, oh, it's like a constant everyday thing. Whereas I feel like Deb, like, deep down she does care about Nathan. And for her to be like, nope, I have to take a pill instead, it almost makes it look campy rather than, like, actually anything serious.
But also, how are you reasoning? How can you reason with someone who's addicted to anything? You can't until they get the help, the proper help that they need. So, like, to expect that Deb wouldn't take the pill is kind of expecting a lot, because I think when you get so deep into an addiction, it doesn't become a choice. It's an addiction. Like, you just decide to stop. It doesn't work like that. So I think it's really complicated. But I agree, there is kind of like a exaggerated aspect to the story now.
Yeah. I feel like if this were to really happen, Deb would maybe like, you know, she would try to be like, okay, like, let me hold it together. Maybe she would go to the game, maybe have a panic attack, go to the bathroom and just, like, take the pill, like, then and there, and then maybe cause a scene. Like, in which case, that would have been interesting. There's too much going on in the game. I'm not expecting, like, more things to happen. God, could you imagine, like, more drama?
Yeah, that would be that would really put a damper on things, too.
But also, like, and also, Karen, like, you know, I don't know, like, how, I never really dealt with, like, somebody who was, like, who was in the throes of addiction, so maybe I don't know the best way to deal with this, but I feel like the way Karen just says, get dressed, like, and see what's left of your dignity, I feel like that's not the right way to confront somebody with addiction.
No.
Like, get your shit together, like, I don't know, like, is there a way to, like, have a little bit of empathy in a way? Like, like, Deb needs to get her shit together. I'm not trying to say, like, she doesn't need tough love. She does. But I don't know. I feel like there's, like, something that... there's a better way to approach the situation.
Yeah. Being harsh like that isn't probably going to help. You know, the person's not going to respond. The person's already agitated because of their addiction. So then you're going to, like, the tone in which you speak to them. Like, demanding them to do things. Yeah.
Yeah, and Karen, like, you know, I feel like the better approach would be like, okay, Karen will be like, okay, Deb, well, you're obviously not going to get your shit together. Okay, so I'm going to leave. I'm going to go to the game alone. You know, and I feel like that would have been a mature thing to do, but I really don't know what's the best approach for this. Like, listeners, I don't know if we have any listeners who are, like, therapists or drug and alcohol counselors, but if you have any expertise on this, like, what would be the best way to help Deb in this situation? Let us know, alwaysothpod@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you.
Yeah, that would be interesting. And just to kind of go back a second, it is, now that I'm thinking about it, like, the way I've always viewed this was that Karen was tricking Deb to get into the car but with the state championship, like, kind of guilting her. And the way I guess I had always perceived it is as she was trying to get her to therapy. And that was maybe the only way that she could actually get her into the car, is saying, oh, we're going to go to the state championship.
That's so interesting. I don't know.
But the way you see it is that it was just like a split-second decision. And I started to see that today when I was rewatching it, because I was really paying close attention. But I feel like my mind is like, whoa. I'm like a little mind blown right now, because I think that's how I've always perceived it.
Wow, that's interesting.
I want to know what other people think.
Yeah, let us know that, please. Like, again, shoot us an email, send us a message on our social media.
It's wild that you can watch this so many times and, like, take something different from it or view it a different way, you know?
Yeah, I've never took it in that way, but that is intriguing to think, like, as, like, a way to trick her into rehab, which I also don't think is right either.
No, I'm not saying I agree with it, but, like, that's just how I saw it. And... you know, like, I think also it was interesting, like, when they were in the car and, like, she took the pill and then they come back later and it's nighttime and then it just flashes to Karen in the car and it pans over and you see that Deb's no longer in there. I thought that was, like, a creative way to, like, reveal, like, oh, what happened? And then, like, you see Deb is in rehab. I don't know how Karen could even admit someone she's nothing to Deb, not a family member. And even I don't even know if family members can technically do that. I don't know how all of that works, but I feel like yeah, rehab has to be voluntary usually. Either. Unless it's like your child, maybe.
Yeah.
So.
We do learn something in a future episode about this, which I'm not going to talk about now. But I don't know, to bring somebody to rehab. I feel like anybody can bring someone to rehab.
I mean, you could bring anyone anywhere, I guess. But like to be admitted, like Karen's not a family member or anything. So that's also a question that I had as I was watching this.
Yeah. Yeah, well, listeners, let us know if you have any expertise on this, because I'm intrigued.
And we also have another, like, medical issue.
Yes, we do.
In this episode, which actually was quite scary. Haley comments, like, that she doesn't really feel well leading up to the scene where Brooke finds her in the bathroom. But, like, she just seemed like she didn't feel well. She had to keep going to the bathroom and everything. And then Brooke knocks on the door because Haley's been in there for so long. And finds her on the floor, and I'm like, oh my gosh, she looks like she's writhing in pain. Like, this is terrifying. And it's happening on the day of the state championship, like, right before.
Yeah. So they go to the hospital, and they deal with this receptionist who was discriminating against cheerleaders.
What was this lady's problem? And first off, if someone's pregnant, I'm pretty sure they would take you, like, immediately.
I mean, like, you know, deal with a particular situation, the emergency room a few years ago, like, I believe it, that, like, people are going, like, they keep people waiting for a long period of time.
Yeah, no, I mean, the ER is known to, like, have a long wait, but I feel like there's certain circumstances where they take you right away, and I thought pregnancy would be one of them.
Yeah, I don't like, know. Like,
heart, you know, like, pain, and your chest pain or whatever, and that, but
and inside the woman's like, I never liked the cheerleaders in my high school. It's like, what is this? It's almost stupid, honestly.
This whole segment is so campy. Like, I know you were talking about campy before, but I was thinking, yeah, it's actually having in my note campy cheerleader scenes in car when they were on the way to the game, because that was stupid. And then also in the hospital, I'm like, this is what kind of writing is this? And it doesn't like fit the tone of this episode at all. Maybe it's supposed to lighten it up a little bit.
It is kind of funny because, like, well, okay, like, comparing those two scenes side by side, actually, it's interesting because in the car they're all fighting each other, you know, because like Haley is mimicking Rachel, be like, hi, I'm Rachel and I'm a dumbass who was failing calculus. And then like Brooke being kind of mean, saying like, hi, my name's Peyton, and if you love me, you're probably gonna die soon. See mothers one and two. Like, very, very hard.
Kind of mean? Like, that is seriously messed up. Like,
yeah, no, that was harsh shit. But yeah, I'm not making excuses for that. But yeah, so in that scene, like, the girls are all fighting each other. And then in this scene, they're fighting and they still have, like, you know, that, like, you know, really catty attitude, but they're fighting for each other because they're fighting for Haley in that regard.
Yeah.
Because the fact that Rachel was like, you know, she was mocking, like, oh my God, I slept with Nathan. Oh, so funny. But then in that later scene, she actually, like, gets up and she says, okay, this is crap. We're going to get you seen. And she goes to the front desk receptionist. And it's kind of cool to see, like, you know, in a crisis, these girls do come through for each other in that way.
Oh, I like that. I wasn't thinking of them in, like, comparing the scenes. But
yeah,
that's
I never
true.
Did either until you brought up the two side by side as, like, yeah, being campy. They're both still campy. Yes, they are. But it's kind of interesting to think about, like, you know, the two scenes side by side in that, yeah, regard.
No, that's actually a really good analysis, Jeremy.
Thank you so much. It's still campy and still stupid, though. Like, let's agree with that.
Yes. And it's just, like, I don't even remember the dialogue, but they're, like, standing there and, like, talking to the nurse. And then the doctor says, okay, I'll help you. And he's about to, like, take Haley to the room or whatever. He's, yeah, like, you all go cheer.
You all go cheer or something. And then Brooke, Peyton, and Bevan are... they all, like, shout at the receptionist. And, like, Brooke and Peyton both say, "Bitch, whore!" And then Bevan's just like, "Thank you."
What was with that scene? Oh, God.
It's so funny, though. When I say it's stupid, I don't mean, like, it's stupid. Like, it's, like... It delights me. It absolutely delights me.
Well, guess what? When I say it's stupid, I mean it.
God damn, okay.
Oh, God. It doesn't fit the tone. That's my problem. It just doesn't fit the tone. But I understand there needed to be a little lightness because it is a rather weirdly dark episode.
But it does lighten it up, though, for real. This is an organic time to talk about a lot of, like, what happens between Brooke and Peyton in this episode, though.
Yeah, there's, like, a back and forth between these two. Like, it starts in the car where Brooke claims, she says to, because Haley was making fun of Rachel, and then they're all making fun of each other, and Brooke says something to Peyton about not saying how you feel. She was referring to...
Yeah, like, she didn't have to, like, "Hi, I'm Peyton," like, "and I don't tell boys how I feel." Yeah. And then Peyton says, "Actually, I did tell him."
And then later on, we get that scene in the hospital where she, admits that she actually did. And he said, "Oh." And then Brooke was like, "Boys can be so dumb."
Yeah, but even before that, though, when Peyton says, like, "Oh, Lucas doesn't want to be with me." And Brooke is almost, like, sad for her.
Yeah.
And then Peyton's like, "You can smile now," and then just walks away. And I feel like that's when Brooke is, like, really reflecting in that regard, because she's like, "Well, that's sad because Lucas didn't want to be with me." At least that's how she was perceiving everything. And so she knows what it's like to have her heart broken in that way. So she kind of felt bad for Peyton.
Yeah, right, you could tell just from, like, her facial expressions that she was, like, actually feeling something. For Peyton, which has not happened in a long time, because Brooke has really been pretty cruel to Peyton, and a lot of different comments that she's made in this episode and then in previous episodes, like this whole season, basically. So the way she's treated her has been crap. So we actually get to see, like, these two used to be best friends and there are still feelings there, you know? Like, Brooke clearly cares, which...
Yeah.
Hopefully... I mean, I love to see that again, because I miss these two liking each other.
Yeah, exactly. Like, coming to bat for each other, too. Mm-hmm. And in another conversation, Peyton says that, like, you know, when I asked him, like, who he wanted to stand next to when his dreams come true, he said you. And Brooke's like, "Why would you tell me that?" And then Peyton's like, "You know what I would have given for him to say me?" And it's just, it's really sad. I really feel for these two. And it seems like they're mending things at this point.
I mean, they should be able to, because, like, the previous episode, we finally have the end of Brooke and Lucas.
Yeah.
Like, they just basically ended on mutual terms, saying this isn't right. And they parted ways, and it was pretty amicable, honestly. Like, it seems like they're going to be friends. So,
yeah,
this kind of opens the door now for Brooke and Peyton to become friends again.
Did you catch the split-second moment during the game when the two of them high-five each other?
Oh, yes, yes. It is, like, a split second.
Yeah, it's so quick. Like, I don't think I've ever noticed it before, but it's blink and you miss it. But it says so much in such a little time. And I really love that.
And I think there was another split second moment that, like, all the cheerleaders were holding hands, too. And I think Peyton and Brooke were holding hands. I don't know if it was the same moment or if it was two separate moments. Now it's getting all mixed up in my head. But yeah, so.
Was that during the part when Lucas, like, makes the winning shot?
I don't know. I think it was during the game.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
It's like an image in my head, but I don't remember exactly what it was.
Gotcha. Do we want to talk about this game and like how things fold out?
Let's do it. Random first thing I want to bring up is from the commentary, now that we're going to talk about the game. I never knew that Barry Corbin had never seen or like gone or watched a basketball game before.
Oh, I missed that part of the commentary. They say that. Yes. Interesting.
And I was like, oh, wow. I didn't know like that was, I didn't know that fact at all. And obviously,
wow,
he can be a great, like, he can act as a coach really, really well. That
yeah.
was an interesting.
To give Barry Corbin more work.
Yes, that was a little interesting tidbit from the commentary.
Wow, that's fascinating.
And he's great in this episode.
Oh, yeah. I love how supportive he is of his team, though, because he's saying, like, hey, like, literally, like, it doesn't matter if you win, but, or it doesn't matter if you lose, but don't lose this way. And I think that's just, that really does say a lot.
Yeah. That like sums him up as a coach, you know, trying to motivate his team. And it's true. It's like, you're at the state championship. You have to give it your all. And we know that like Nathan is holding them back, basically.
Nathan's holding them back and they're all like sort of fighting each other too. Because Skills and Lucas, like they agree to freeze out Nathan.
Yes.
Because Lucas shares with Skills, like, hey, like, Nathan's going to throw the game. We're going to freeze him out. We're not going to give him the ball or anything. Which, by the way, this game is sponsored by Name Brand Restaurant Watch.
I want my baby back, baby back, baby back. Barbecue sauce.
I'm a little bit more muted with my, like, name brand watches now because I'm like, can my neighbors hear me now? So I'm always, like, thinking about that. I'm like, maybe I should be cognizant of that. Maybe I should start speaking like this. Doing some ASMR shit.
I did see name brand orange soda watch in the cafe.
Yes, that was in there too.
R-R-R.
But I didn't have to read it from I didn't have time to print it up.
But yes, so back to Skills and Lucas, like, teaming up, basically.
And Lucas also doesn't take his heart medication.
That's what I was going
to
say.
Okay, I'm sorry.
We see the pill bottle, like, he puts the pills in his hand, and then he puts them back in the bottle, and then that's that. So
yeah.
The first half of the game, they're really struggling because... You know, they're basically fighting against Nathan. Then Nathan is able to talk to Haley, and he says that was worried about her because he didn't see her. It ends up that it was pain caused by stress. I don't know.
Yeah.
Haley doesn't even tell Nathan, like, everything that happened.
Yeah, she doesn't want Nathan to stress out during the game. Yeah.
She reveals that they're going to have a boy, and then that puts things into perspective for Nathan and, like, motivates him.
Which, not to bring the woke police into this here, but why does knowing the shape of your child's genitals make you want to play a game better?
I don't know. I guess it just makes it more real. Like, knowing... I guess it just makes it more real. I don't know.
I have had some people, like, say that about that. It's like, it's not necessarily knowing, like, the gender of their baby. Like, I'm hearing this from, like, hardcore leftist people, too, who are, like, completely okay if their child turns out to be trans or anything like that. But they want to know the sex of their baby because it's just, like, they just want to be closer to the idea of their child.
Yeah.
And, you know, if their kid, you know, the sex is a boy, like, if they end up being a girl... later in life, they'll still, like, accept them. But it's just, like, they just want to know, like... they just want to know, basically. So,
I think in this...
But I'm sorry, I had to make a joke here.
Yeah,
that.
I think... Well, you know, I think that gender reveal parties are dumb.
Yeah.
But I think in this moment, it, like, brings clarity, like, oh, I'm about to have a child, and I need to be the best person I can be for that child. Like, this child's real.
It is a real child. And they do not want the kids to be making fun of his dad when he grows up.
Yeah, yeah.
Making fun of his dad for losing the state championship. Oh.
I know. That would not be too good.
But they all end up winning. And one of the things I love that Lucas makes the winning shot because this is a callback to the season 1 finale when he misses the shot and then he ends up redeeming himself. And not only that, but I think that also is, like, a good character moment for Nathan. The fact that Nathan, like, the captain of the team, passes the ball to his brother and lets him make the winning shot. Even though this would have been, like, such a big thing for him, like, if he made the winning shot. It was just really great for the character to have Lucas do it. And just a really great full circle moment.
Yeah, I like that Lucas did it, too. That whole scene where, like, he's making the shot, and then it feels like time slows down a little bit, and the music changes, and the confetti comes down, and then you get the...
Oh, it definitely does slow down.
Yeah. You get these little scenes. You kind of feel like... Like, the way they do the sound, like, you can... It's everything's muted in the background, and you just see that couple, and you hear their dialogue. Everything else is muted around. And then it fades... Then you can hear the crowd again, and then it fades into another couple. Because we see, like, I think, Skills and Bevan. We see Nathan and Haley. We see Lucas and Brooke. And that's when Brooke gives Lucas the okay to have feelings for Peyton, basically.
Yes, Brooke and Peyton, Lucas hug. Brooke is like, this is like a dream come true. So who do you want next, Theo? And then Lucas looks over at Peyton, and Brooke's just like, go. Go. Like, it just really tugs at my heartstrings.
Yeah. And then Lucas kind of, like, pauses and looks over at Peyton. And then, you know, they come together, and you get that flashback. Because Peyton's like, you know, congratulations and everything. And he's like, she says, I'll be seeing you. And then turns to go away, and then you get that flashback scene from season one when Lucas says, I'll be seeing you.
Season one, episode
pilot,
one.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, don't forget, Lucas also says, or Peyton says, nice shot. And then Lucas responds, nice legs.
Yes.
Another callback.
Yes, you're right.
And One Tree Hill does this better than any other show, I feel like, with, like, callbacks to previous episodes. And they always do it so cleverly and so organically.
I know the chickeny leg comment triggers Hillary because it was, like, the creator's doing.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know.
I feel that. Okay.
I feel like saying nice leg is fine, but, like, why do you have to add the chickeny thing?
Oh, yeah. Because, yeah, like, he didn't even say that in season one. Like, you know, he just says nice legs. Yeah. He doesn't say they're a little chickeny,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
But anyway, what happens next, Caitlin?
Then Lucas, as, like, Peyton has, like, kind of turned away, and then Lucas starts to talk, it's you. When all my dreams come true, the one I want next to me, it's you. It's you, Peyton. And the confetti and the kiss. Oh, my God. I have to say, watching, like, from when they make the shot and up until this moment when, like, it all fades out, I feel like when I was watching today, it was just, like, I had chills. It's like watching it, you know, for the first time again. I feel like my eyes were welling up. I'm like, this has got me all in the feels. I love it so much. We can critique why Lucas suddenly... decides he has feelings for Peyton. I feel like we could definitely...
I don't think he suddenly decided. I think he always did.
I feel like the way they write it, it makes it seem like it's sudden more than it probably actually is sudden.
I disagree on that. Look at me defending Leighton right here.
But yeah, I'm going to take this moment. Like... It's just one of the best moments of the show, and I don't care. It is one of the best moments. It's just like, it's epic. It's like... Who doesn't want that in their life, to have, like, this epic life moment, and then there's a kiss on top of it, and there's confetti literally flying down from the ceiling? I mean, I understand, like, these moments probably don't happen in real life. I've never experienced a moment like that, but, like, dang, it's so great.
You never felt like these moments of, like, maybe not, like, you know, ended with a kiss or anything like that, but those moments where it's just pure joy.
Yeah.
Like.
Oh, for sure.
You ever have, like, moments, like. Yeah, like, moments like this happen every once in a while, and, like, I don't know, I feel like watching it this time around and living, like, more life since I saw it as a teen. I'm like, I've had so many moments like this. It made me think, like, aw, like, it's nice to be happy.
Yeah, I've definitely had moments of pure joy. I'm just saying, like, the grandness of this. Like, you're winning the state championship and then you're, like, finding the love of your life finally. Like, that is extreme. I have not had a moment that extreme, but yes, there are those, like,
not yet.
Those specific moments that are important in your life, for sure.
You haven't had that moment yet, Caitlin. Yet. There is still time. Just because it didn't happen to us when we were 17, it doesn't mean it can't happen.
I know. So, like, it's just, then the song that's playing, Heartbeats by Jose Gonzalez, is epic. Like, honestly, one of the, I don't know what my favorite music moment of the show is, but this is one of the top ones for sure. It could very well be it. I'm not going to commit until, you know, we get to the series, but it is one of my top favorite musical moments. It's hard to choose one, but like this is just the perfect, as soon as the song starts playing, like when they make the shot and there's like, you know, all of the cheers and everything, and then it's like time slows down and the sound kind of goes out and you just hear the song. It's magical. It's perfect. Whoever decided that on that song is a genius. And I am very disappointed that
Lindsay Wolfenden.
Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes the creator does decide as witness in the commentary. Like
he mentioned that. Like he said that he had like, you know, songs like in his like, you know, in his folder. He says, hey, I want to use this once sometime and whatnot.
Exactly. So I don't know.
There's like, a back and forth relationship.
It's kind of like a collaboration. And who was the specific person who decided on this one? I'm really upset that that wasn't talked about in the commentary at all. I feel like this is a major musical moment of the show, and how they didn't talk about it is beyond me.
It's so good. It is a beautiful moment, which is sounds surprising coming from me.
Yeah, it's great.
But even I love this moment. I love that entire moment, personally.
How can you not? I mean, even if you don't ship them together.
Yeah, it makes me happy. Like, I felt happy watching this.
It really is perfect. I mean, the directing of it all, of that whole sequence, is truly perfect. Song choice, all of it.
And things that are not so perfect.
Oh, God. Are we getting into the coda now?
Yes, we are.
I'm not ready to go from joy to heartbreak. Can we not... Can the episode just end where, like, you get that kind of crane shot above Lucas and Peyton, you know, like the, like, above them? Can we just get that faded out and that's how it ends?
That's just how it ends. Or, like, when they're in Karen's Cafe, that's, like, nice and cute.
That was cute, for sure.
All of them handed out and whatnot. I love when Lucas, like, talks to Haley and is like, it's like, hey, have you met my girlfriend, Peyton? And Haley's like, what? When did this happen?
And then Peyton just starts to get embarrassed and walk away. This is adorable.
I thought that was so cute and endearing. Like,
that is so teenager.
It's authentic.
It's so teenager.
I would do that in my late 20s. Yeah. I'd be like, oh my God. Yep. But also don't. Keep going.
And then they go in like the little hallway in the back. And steal a kiss, and that, I always love that. That's cute.
Yeah, and Peyton's like, why don't you come over? Because Lucas is like, oh, I forgot how good of a kisser you are. And then Peyton's like, well, why don't you come over and you can relearn that for a few hours or whatever she says.
I think remind you for a few hours.
Remind you, yeah.
That's so cute.
But anyway... Coda to Lessons Learned by Ray LaMontagne. Did we ever figure out how to pronounce
that name? So the creator in the commentary was saying LaMontagne.
LaMontagne, okay. That makes sense. It's like champagne. Yep. Okay. So Lessons Learned by Ray LaMontagne. So what happens first?
So we are in Karen's Cafe, and as Lucas and Dan clean up, Lucas is feeling good about the state championship. They're kind of talking like father and son, which is like a nice moment to see. And Dan's like, says something along the lines like, how does it feel talking to your old man? Like, this is something we have not seen before.
Yeah, he's like, what does it feel? Because Lucas is like, oh, I feel good. And Dan's like, oh, feel good. What did it say, championship or talking to your old man?
Yeah.
And Lucas says, both.
Yeah, that's an interesting moment. But then he also says he just wishes Keith was there. And then Lucas walks away and you kind of zoom in on Dan and he's like, ugh.
Yeah.
That reminder of what he did.
Mm-hmm. And then we go to the exterior of Karen's cafe. There's so much that happens in this scene. I don't even know how to, like, go about it.
Oh, my God.
So Nathan is about to tell Haley about, like, what happened that night. He says, oh, there's a reason why I was playing the game so poorly. And Haley's like, what are you talking about? And all of a sudden we see headlights come toward them. And then Haley's like, Nathan, get out of the way. So she pushes Nathan out of the way. And then Dante, like, completely runs Haley over, and Haley gets injured. Dante crashes the car. Lucas comes over. He's like, oh, my God, what happened? And then he calls 911, and then Nathan runs to the car that Dante's in, pulls Dante out, punches the shit out of him, and then Dan comes over and says, Nathan, you gotta go. You gotta be there for your wife and your son. And the police come, and Dan essentially decides to take the fall for that. So he punches the ground really hard to make it look like he was the one who punched Dante, which, interesting thing about the audio commentary, Paul Johansson had a real hand injury during this time, and the creator was like, oh, well, great news. I have an arc where you can wear a cast.
I know, that's clever.
So it was, you know, I thought that was interesting. But yeah, so Dan puts his hands up for the cops, like, lots of tragedy happening. And then it gets worse. Lucas is then speaking to the paramedic. They ask him, like, how long has Haley been pregnant? And he responds with, I don't know, a few, I don't understand this timeline in Tree Hill either, so I'd much rather have a heart attack. And he has a heart attack.
That's not funny. I'm laughing at you, dear me.
I know. I just have to make light of the situation because there's a lot of trauma here.
Like, we have literally Haley is run over. Then Nathan punches Dante. Then Dan takes the fall for it and punches his own hand to the pavement. And then Lucas has a heart attack. I'm just trying to recap here because that is so much.
You did that recap so much more succinctly, and maybe you should have done that.
It was just a lot. And then also in the commentary, they were talking about how, like, the stump people, like, there was literally, like, the stump person from Haley was literally run over by the car. I'm like,
yeah.
That is wild to think, like, even a stump person would be hit by a car.
Yeah, but they know what they're doing. They know how to, like, maneuver their bodies to make sure they're not injured.
I know, but it's wild to me that that can be a job. I know it's all planned out.
Sounds like fun.
Like, the person who crashes Dante's car, you know, obviously is a stunt person. So that is, like, a major scene to film. I kind of wish they went a little bit more in depth with explaining that, because that had to be, I wonder how long that took to film all of that.
Yeah. So then we are back to the hospital, and we have, like, an overlay with, like, a radio announcer speaking over what's happening in the episode. It's happened for the, you know, it was meant to happen from earlier in the game, but it's also describing what's happening, like, in the scenes. So do you want to be the radio announcer, or do you want to describe what's happening, Caitlin?
It doesn't matter. I can be the radio announcer.
Okay. Are you going to do your best radio announcer voice?
Sure.
Okay. So we're in the hospital.
Time is running out now, and I tell you, you got to feel for Nathan Scott. I mean, sure, he has made some mistakes, but you get the sense that if this is how it ends, he's never going to forgive himself.
And this is happening as Nathan is crying on the floor as Haley is wheeled into the hospital.
And that was, like, the same crying scene that we saw at the beginning of the episode.
Yep, so we get context for that now.
And then the radio announcer continues, and Lucas Scott is being swarmed. I wouldn't doubt it if they didn't carry the kid out of here tonight and never bring him back.
And this is when Lucas is being wheeled in. Ooh, dark
rough.
Shit.
Really rough.
Then we're in Peyton's bedroom. And, you know, this is as we're seeing Peyton is smiling, listening to the radio. Brooke is walking in.
And the announcer continues, "I have never seen some of these kids so happy. And can you blame them? They've been waiting a long time for this moment."
And then Brooke comes in and is like, "Lucas and Haley are in a hospital. It's bad, Peyton. It's really bad." Which, this scene was in the promo.
Was it?
It was, yes. So this is like a little bit of a spoiler. So, like, you know, we knew that, like,
something was going to happen.
Regardless was going to happen. We knew that, like, Lucas and Haley would be in the hospital in some regard, which the episode's so great. Like, it was so great knowing it, but it just makes you wonder, why did they spoil that?
Yeah, that is weird.
But Peyton is suddenly sad. And then we go to Karen's cafe exterior again, and we see Whitey looking on, like, the road. Like, the scene of the crime.
Which we also saw at the very beginning of the episode. That's the first scene, too.
Yes.
And this time the announcer says, "And there, at the center of it all, is Whitey Durham, standing alone, taking it all in. Ladies and gentlemen, the Tree Hill Ravens are champions at last."
And then we're back to the hospital again, and Nathan is crying on the floor.
And there's not a dry eye in the house.
End of episode.
That is so great how they used the announcer in the beginning of the episode with the misdirect and how they use it at the end. And it explains also what's happening currently. There's like a double meaning to what's being said, you know?
Yeah.
And it's pretty powerful, I have to say.
And there's a contrast between, especially like, oh, they are champions at last. And like, but look what happened here. It's just like, I don't, like, what is the word for that when, like, the words aren't matching? Like, the double meaning behind it? Like, I don't know what it is, but...
Like a contradiction?
It's very clever.
Kind of? Like...
Yeah. But yeah. It still works, and...
Because...
I love it. It's very dark.
It is very dark. Because, like, at the beginning of the episode, we get the announcer from 18 years ago. And you're thinking that it's current day, and that they lost. So, like, that commentary is sad in itself because, like, they lost then and then you think they're losing today also. But then we get the new commentary and they actually win, but it's paired with all of this tragedy. Oh, my gosh. It's like you can't even enjoy the state championship. There has to be all of this darkness.
Soap opera, baby.
It's totally One Tree Hill, that's for sure. And think about it, we just had the season 3 finale not that long ago with the whole car crash and being in the hospital then. So,
I wish I remembered our bus conversation the morning after this episode aired.
This had to be a really good one.
Because I remember, like, you know, I remember losing my shit, like, for this episode.
You know, I think my most vivid memories of watching this is seeing the ending and just being, like, in total shock of what happened. And I also wanted to point out, like, this isn't even, like, a mid-season break episode.
No, because the next one is.
The next one is, which I find that so shocking because this seems like this would be, like, the holiday break episode, you know, before they would come back in January. But no, they didn't decide that. This just feels like such a big episode to be just in the... Not in the middle of the... I mean, I guess so. There's one episode that follows it, but it's just kind of so big.
The episode that follows it, I feel like, is more of a... It's... I would consider this to be the mid-season finale. The next episode is more like an epilogue.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, we're not talking about that yet, but...
Yeah.
The next episode is definitely more like a bookend. I wouldn't consider it, like, a finale by any means.
True. But it is shocking that they didn't try to, like, do that as a major cliffhanger in the middle of the season. That really surprises me.
Yeah, it's like everybody's life hangs in the balance and whatnot. But we'll talk more about the next episode when we get to the next episode. I'm like, I have too many thoughts. I'm like, want to talk about, but I'm like, nope, I can't do it now.
All right.
So,
what's your favorite quote?
This is gonna come as such a surprise. "When all my dreams come true, the one I want next to me, it's you. It's you, Peyton."
Wow, that's your favorite. I mean, you know that's my favorite.
It is, yeah. It works. Like, It's an iconic quote, and I can't deny that. My favorite musical moment is Heartbeats by Jose Gonzalez. I guess that's your favorite, too.
Same.
We're in complete agreement.
Yes. Right. And then I'm going to give an honorable mention to Lessons Learned by Ray LaMontagne at the Coda.
Okay.
I'm going to give that as an honorable mention because I still think that was, that's a sad song and it pairs well with the moment too. But yes, Heartbeats is just perfect. Perfect.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And I give this episode 5 out of 5 confetti kisses.
Are you shitting me, Caitlin? That's, okay, yeah, I gave it a 5 out of 5, but I literally wrote the exact same.
Are you thing. Serious?
I am not kidding you.
I want to see it.
I was about to say, like, do you want me to, like, take a screenshot?
Yes.
I am doing this as proof.
That is wild. Have we ever done that?
Like, I was thinking, like, okay, yeah, we have the same quote, the same musical moment, but I'm like, oh my god, we have the same, like, scale, too. I sent it to you just now.
Oh my god, how do we have the same?
We were just on the same wavelength for this episode entirely, and I am loving it. Okay.
I don't think we've ever done that before.
No.
That is amazing. I mean, it's perfect.
Okay. Wow. So, Caitlin and I are the same person.
Apparently.
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 But anyway.
I mean, I'm glad we agree because, like, this is such a big episode, and if you did not like it, I would be really upset with you.
I mean, I did have, like, you know, little minor moments to critique here and there, as you can say, but I feel like it didn't, like, those little moments of criticism didn't overpower the absolute love I have for this episode. Like, there's so many twists and turns, the characters are moving in more positive directions, mm-hmm. and it is, like, by far, like, one of the better episodes so far that we've seen.
For sure. I mean, it's one of my favorite episodes of the whole show. It ranks, for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Always and Forever. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at AlwaysOTHPod. You can also email us at alwaysothpod@gmail.com. That's AlwaysOTHPod.
Always and Forever is also on Patreon, and you can support us there at patreon.com/alwaysothpod to gain access to our private Discord server, where you can chat with us and other listeners. You can also access bonus episodes, including our spoiler full mini episodes, our Drama Queens reaction podcast, Royal Review, and our movie podcast, Baker Soundstage. You can also access episodes before anybody else.
But if you can't support us on Patreon, you can also leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That's the easiest way to support us and to help One Tree Hill fans, new and old, find us. And if you leave us a review, we may read it on the show.
When was the last time we had a review, Caitlin?
It's been a minute.
I'm like, I'm going to read. Like, what is our most recent review? Because we'll even show that even though we probably already read this on the show, we'll read this anyway. Okay, yeah, our last review was 1 year ago. It's from Mountain That Rides. Extremely entertaining. Set the audio speed to 0.5x, and it sounds like a drunken conversation about OTH.
That's quite a review.
But it's still 5 stars. So you can still give us 5 stars.
Oh my god. Oh, I love it.
Anyway, I am Jeremy Rodriguez, and you can follow me on that godforsaken social media site, Twitter, which I will continue to dead name, at Rodriguez Jeremy.
I'm Caitlin Ilinich, and you can follow me on Twitter, maybe, kind of, sometimes, at Miss I Reads.
I was about to say, are you still there? I don't even know.
I lurk more than I tweet.
Oh my god. Yeah, same.
We'll be seeing ya.
We'll be seeing ya. You're waiting for me. Wow. That's so polite of you. We were the same person for everything except for our call-outs.
Yeah.
You know what we should have done for the intro, actually? We should have, like, tried to mimic each other. That way I could have been like, my name's Caitlin Ilinich and I have red hair. What would you have done for me?
I'm Jeremy Rodriguez, and Barry Corbin needs more work.
I was about to say, do I sound like that?
I don't know. I was just trying to make my voice different.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.